Hi, this is Lee Lockney with the Group Chicago, and you're listening to the Rock Solid Podcast.
To be. This is small town music. This is big town music. He's ahead of his time, you know, but he can't use it. If only he could prove it. Well, tomorrow's just a song away, a song away, a song away.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Rock Solid, the comedy podcast for all things music, both new and classic. I'm Pat Francis, and joining me in the Zoom room today, we've got our Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee. He's a founding and current member of the band Chicago. Please welcome Lee Lockney. Lee, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show.
Now, you're in the middle of a tour date right now. You did a show last night?
Yes.
And you do a show tomorrow?
Do another show tomorrow. We have a day off today, so this is a bit of a rest day, but we traveled 8 hours to get here, and I just woke up a few minutes ago.
Well,
so, look, forgive me for, oh my God, what's going on here?
Well, look, I thank you so much for giving me some time on your day off, because I know you need that. You need that day of rest.
We do. Doesn't everyone?
Before we get into why you're here today, I want to ask you this, since we're talking about touring. You've been doing this for over 50 years. You've seen everything there is to possibly see across the U.S. What do you do on your down days to keep yourself busy?
Well, as basic as it might seem, I practice my horn, and which is something that I have to do every day. And amazingly enough, it keeps getting better because I do that. So I try not to stop and, take time off thinking that, well, don't worry, it'll be there tomorrow. Because I want to improve on this and not just sort of stay status quo.
And physically, as a gentleman your age, what do you have to do to maintain, other than practicing? Is there anything else you need to do health-wise with your breathing and all that kind of stuff? Because, like, you know, if you're the lead singer, you could sing in the lower register. If you're the guitar player or bass player, you could sit in a stool. But the Chicago horns, you guys have to be on point every single night. It has to sound exactly the way we remember it.
Well, that's why I say I have to practice every day. And I start very softly, just that first note, getting the first note correct, and then expanding from there with all the different exercises. And, you know, it takes a few hours on a day off. On a show day, it takes less time just to get it moving, and then go blow my brains out at the show.
And I assume no smoking or anything like that in your lifestyle.
I have not smoked since 91.
All right. That's great.
For quite a while.
That's great. 30 years.
I haven't had any drinks or drugs since 81. So,
well, the both of these things are probably the reason that I'm able to talk to you today.
Exactly. I'd be, like 6 feet under, I believe.
All right. Lee, on September 10th, Rhino Records is going to release a 16 CD deluxe edition box set. We're calling it Chicago at Carnegie Hall Complete.
Complete.
This is every single show you guys recorded in 1971, between April 5th and I think April 10th.
Six days, eight shows.
Wow. That's amazing. And is this something that you always wanted to eventually come out?
I had no idea that this would ever be possible. Rhino Records owns the masters, and they suggested to the engineer, Tim Jessup, that, he asked if he would be able to maybe pull the project together. They had 41 tapes that they took from the tape form, 2-inch tape, and converted it to digital tape, sent all 41 to Tim, and he started one at a time taking the 60-cycle hum on 41 tapes, just the hum by itself
Wow.
off the tape, one at a time. And then the next step was whatever sound was next. There was not only the 60 cycle hums, but various other noises that were on the each tape that he had to do one at a time. It took a couple months just to get to the point where we could hear the actual music. And then we started editing.
Okay.
And, you know, getting the ambience, because when you sit in Carnegie Hall, it was built for classical music. And, you know, you play very softly and you can hear it in the other side of the other end of the hall. And but when you play rock and roll music, you can probably still hear some of those notes that we played in 71 today. Walk in there. They bounce around forever. And so, in other words, that's ambience. You have to get into each instrument one at a time, pull it up on your screen, and take the ambience before the note and after the note and delete that.
Wow.
So by the time you get finished with the trumpet and the trombone and the saxophone and every vocal, you have more control over how much Carnegie Hall you want to put in. But we ended up making it sound and feel like you're sitting in the Carnegie Hall listening to the show.
Well, I've been lucky enough to be listening to it for the past couple of days. Once I scheduled this interview with you, they sent me a stream. So I've been listening with headphones in the computer, and it's amazing. I mean, it's incredible. Now, how involved were you personally with this project?
I did a lot of editing. I became Tim's second engineer.
Nice.
As well as the producer. I had no idea I'd be the producer either, because they really approached Tim first.
Okay.
And it happens to be my studio. So I was sitting next to him and I went, hey, you know, what can I do? You know, I got to get in here, because if anybody knows where the body's buried, it's me. Once I start listening to the music, I remember, oh yeah, that's how we used to play this song. This is where, you know, we were standing. I remember where we were standing on the stage and all of the other particulars, right? So it was just a lot of fun, a labor of love. And we enjoyed, it was like 10 months of work. So kept me quite busy during the pandemic.
Well, the fans are going to enjoy this thing so much. And it's great that you put this together and it's finally out there. I'm going to let you in on a secret. I reached out to see if I could interview Robert about this. Uh-huh. And Robert said, no, that's Lee's project. Lee's the one you got to talk to. So thank you, Robert, for steering me in the right direction. Because
thank you, Robert.
Yeah, because look, it's right now, the guys that are flying the Chicago flag for all these years still are you and do we say Jimmy or do we say James Pankow? What do we call him?
I call him Jimmy.
All right. I don't know him, but I'll call him Jimmy too.
By both James, Jimmy Franco.
And Robert, you three have been holding it down for over 50 years. This is incredible. And I want to tell you this. I was at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction.
Okay.
I went there. I finagled my way down to the green room. Well, not to the green room, to the dressing rooms. And I got to say hi to all you guys. Now you don't remember that, but I certainly do.
That's great.
We spoke and you guys all signed my Chicago album that night. So it was,
which album did you have?
You know what? I brought the greatest hits because I've always loved that cover of you guys falling off the paint scaffolding, and there's a lot of white area so everyone can sign it. And, so that's the one I brought.
Well, I was drinking back then.
Well, yeah, you were probably really falling off that scaffolding.
I was definitely falling off.
So that night was a thrill. First of all, my favorite band of all time is Cheap Trick. And and then I love Chicago. So, you know, Chicago's Illinois is represented that night. And then to see Deep Purple and Steve Miller. I mean, it was just what a great night for you guys. I was so excited. And you are you the most emotional person in the band, Lee? Because you seem to get...
I'm the crybaby of the group, yes.
You seem to get... And look, that's how I am too. But yeah, you seem to get choked up pretty quickly.
Yes, I do. Yeah. It's happened all my life. And I thought it was just me, but my youngest brother is the same.
Yeah.
He admitted it to me. I forget when, but he said, I can relate to that very easily because I do the same thing in movies and, you know, wherever it is. It's just my son is my youngest son, Lee David. He's always, are you crying? What are you
crying? Yeah. I mean, that's how my older brother is too. We're all like that. It's ridiculous because I'll see like some sad story on the news and I don't cry when I'm watching the story, but then my wife comes home and as I'm telling her the story, I cannot get through it.
I understand perfectly.
But I like that we're like that. I like it.
Yeah.
I don't want to hold everything in.
I don't want to hold everything in, but as it's happening, I'm going to myself, why am I crying?
Right.
I want to be able to speak this right now, not cry.
Right. I want to be able to tell you this and then I can't do it. Let me ask you about the Carnegie Hall shows. When you were listening back to these tapes, can you, as the creator of this music, can you hear a difference between Make Me Smile on night one and Make Me Smile on night four?
They're very similar from one night to the next as we were playing it at that time.
Yeah.
The song itself has not changed a note since its inception, since Jimmy wrote it. And he was still writing it while we were recording in the studio.
Wow.
In 69 or 68, I guess we recorded it. And, I'm sorry. That one was probably 69 or 70 that we recorded the ballet, because it was a 14-minute piece that he was still putting the puzzle pieces together as we were in the studio. So we were all trying to keep up with all of the different changes that the song has within it. And it was difficult then to play it, and it hasn't changed one bit. It is as equally as difficult today as it was then.
As you're listening back to these tapes, how long in did you say to yourself, you know what? We were pretty damn good.
It amazed me when I kept listening to it and go, man, you know, Peter Cetera is a great bass player, great voice. I played pretty consistently. I can't believe I played this consistently. I mean, people have said that to me before. I'm my own worst critic. And but I got to hear right in front of me that we were pretty damn good. And, we just went out and let it all hang out, young kids. And we were still learning how to play ourselves.
Yeah, you were babies. You were 23 when Chicago Transit Authority came out. So you're, I don't know, 25, 26 at Carnegie Hall?
I was probably 21, I think, or 22.
Okay.
So, 24.
All right. 24.
Yeah.
Still a baby though. I mean, if you know 24s nowadays, that's,
that's right.
When you're
you're that age, you think you're growing up.
Right.
You know, and then you look back on it in retrospect and you go, maybe not so much.
Exactly. I want to touch on something you just said about Peter's bass playing. I think that gets lost a lot because of the way Peter's career went in his solo career. People forget that he was a great bass player because
he would stop playing bass when we started doing the 16 and 17.
Yeah. Yeah.
He would actually concentrate on his vocals so much that he'd stop playing the bass. We got to have a bass.
Yeah.
So I started playing. Oh my gosh. This is my son. I have to decline. I'm touching my screen like it's a touch screen.
I've done that too. That's okay. You were totally cool. But yeah,
the phone, I can touch the screen. The
right. Computer, not the computer. No. But yeah, Pete, I mean, you couldn't be in the band Chicago and not be a great musician. So I think Peter's bass player playing, people forget about it. So I'm glad that you touched on that briefly. When you guys were asked to play Carnegie Hall, even though you had successful albums prior to that, was that something to where you thought, hey, I think we made it?
I'm not sure when we started thinking that we made it. Mm-hmm. We were so busy working all the time, making it or not making it really didn't enter our minds all that much.
Gotcha.
We were busy traveling from one place to the next and doing the next show. And I practiced back then, but I didn't have the same type of focus in practice that I do now. The focus that I have now is really improving my playing.
Gotcha.
Whereas back then, I think the things that I was doing was just sort of keeping me up and, you know, I'll make it. No, I think I can. I think I can.
Probably playing Carnegie Hall, though, that was something for your parents to grab onto. They were probably very proud of that run of concerts.
They had started thinking that we made it by then.
There you go.
They were accepting the fact that I was going to do this for a living and I was actually successful at it.
Did you guys ever go back to Carnegie Hall and play there since then?
No, I don't think we've ever been back there.
Is that something you would entertain or would that make it not special if you went back and did it now?
I don't know. It'd be pretty special. Any gig is pretty special.
That's true.
All this time later.
That's true. Yeah. Are you still surprised that you guys pack the house? I mean, every time I see you here in LA, it's packed. And I assume that's how it is all over the country. My family lives in Pennsylvania and my sister's seen you many times at various venues in Pennsylvania. And she tells me it's always jammed.
The shows get pretty well jammed and it amazes me that we're still able to do that. The thing that amazes me the most is that they still want to hear the same songs that put us on the map before. I mean, there's something that generates a response, no matter what age group it is.
Yeah.
They like those songs and they feel it. I can feel it.
They're timeless classics. That might sound cheesy, but it's true. I mean, if you go to a wedding, you're going to hear a Chicago song. It might be the song the bride and groom dance to. I mean, it's everywhere. It's on classic rock radio. It's on adult contemporary radio. It's everywhere. And you guys have been doing it for so many decades that if there's an all 70 station or 80 station or 90 station, you guys are in every format as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. I've never had to get a job, so that's pretty cool.
you have a job. You definitely have a job. Let me ask you about in 2017, Walt Perezater, he retires from the band. Now, many members have come and gone, you know, Peter, Jason, Tris. I mean, many members, you guys are an ever, you know, changing group of people. But you, Walt, and Jimmy were the horns. You guys... Right. You know,
I think he actually retired quite a bit before that, but
okay. But you guys are like, you're the Chicago horns. You're so linked together. How difficult was that for you when Walt decided to step away and you have to play with someone else?
It was coming. Mm-hmm. It was on its way because Walt was, he started to have some health problems mm-hmm. that we knew eventually would take him away from us. I mean, he's still alive, obviously, but he wasn't going to be able to keep traveling as much. And so we had more and more often, we had a substitute coming in for him. And now Ray Herman has been with us, I think 17 years already.
Right. And Ray's fantastic.
Ray is incredible.
Yeah.
And he has become, you know, part of the horn section. Mm-hmm.
The current set list for this tour is massive. You guys are playing 30 songs. That's
it takes two and a half hours to do the show.
I mean, that's great for the fans. That's great for the ticket holder. They're getting their money's worth. You guys must be exhausted after a 30 song set.
You get tired, but that's what we do.
Right.
Well, I mean, what else should we do? If you play too little, people are going to complain that they didn't have to.
That's true. That's true. If you play 15 songs,
I'd rather give them more than they expect.
How do you guys put together a set list? I mean, 25 studio albums, I believe. How do you do it?
Yeah. It is. There are certain songs that you being a fan understand that we can't get out of there without you demanding that we play them.
You have to play 25 or 6-2-4.
We have to play Hard to Say I'm Sorry. Yep. Inspiration. Mm-hmm. Beginnings.
Yep.
Does anybody really know what time it is? Searching. You know, I mean, I can go on and just you and me.
Yeah. Make me smile.
Make me smile.
Color my world. I mean, it's a never ending list.
Yeah, exactly. And both of those songs are incorporated in the ballet.
Right.
Make me smile and color my world.
Time goes on, I realize just what you mean to me, and now that you're here.
I mean, Jimmy had no idea that he'd have two hits out of the one piece.
I know. And that's pretty cool.
We were incensed that they wanted to edit our music back in the day, you know, and then you finally realize that those are the advertisements for the band.
That's right.
Boy, thank you.
Who's in charge of picking the set list? I mean, once you pick, the songs that you must play, how do you fill out with some rarities or deep cuts? Who chooses those? Is it by committee?
Robert does a lot of it, and then he shows it to me and Jimmy and says, you guys agree with this? Peter Chivarelli gets involved with the set, our manager.
Okay.
And he is the only manager who is always hands-on. He wants to be involved. Not wants to, he just can't, he's compelled.
He can't not do it. Yeah.
He cannot not do it. Yeah. So he's always around, and we decide on the set and then we adjust it as we go through and see what works and what doesn't work.
And
we've done it for so long that you want to start out strong and then bring it down a little bit and, the ebb and flow of a show.
Yeah.
And by the time we get to the end of the first set, you want to end on a high note. And same thing with the second set. The construction is pretty much the same.
It's almost
by the end of the second set, you got to be really, hopefully have everybody on their feet. Because if you're not, know. What do we do? We got to change this.
It's devising the set list. It sounds like it's almost like sequencing an album to make sure that it flows the way it should flow.
And as sequencing an album in the day was quite different than it is now, because you can just push a button and their sequencing is pretty much out the window.
Yeah.
It's, you know, the people, I think, play the first song, and if they don't like that one, they move on to the next album.
I know, it's sad. Yeah, so. It's sad that that's how people listen now.
Yeah.
I don't listen like that. I'm an older gentleman, but yeah, it's sad.
You and me both.
Yeah. What's the most fun song for you to play live? Is there one that when that's coming up, you're like, oh, I love it. This is the one.
I've always liked Beginnings. Jimmy and I have solos, later on in the song, but I've always liked the construction of Beginnings.
An oldie but a goodie, Beginnings.
Fun.
Cool. And now,
like an octet.
The flip side of that question would be, what's the most challenging song as a trumpet player that you have to play on a nightly basis?
The ballet is very challenging. Because there's that whole classical section in between Make Me Smile, Color My World, and then Make Me Smile Reprise. There's all the da 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 da, very, you know, light and airy. And after playing a few other songs before that, the light and airy is a little more difficult sometimes, depending on if we're outdoors, if the stage is really loud and blurry, you know. Right. You have to act like that's not happening.
Yeah.
You know,
just got to get through it.
Play it very softly with the light touch. You know. It's sometimes challenging, but the ballet is probably is one of the most difficult songs. There's stuff toward the end, like the getaway at the end of Hard to Say I'm Sorry.
Yeah.
that's, you know, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's so fun. Getaway is so fun.
It's difficult, but you make it less difficult by, you know, knowing what to expect and getting in there and just going, baby.
All right. Explain songwriting credits to me, because I feel like the horn players from Chicago should have a songwriting credit on every song, because
you've been talking to Jimmy.
you know what I mean? Like, someone writes a song, they write the melody, they write the lyrics, but then they're not writing the horn parts. I mean, I don't believe they are. I don't know if Terry and Robert and Peter wrote the horn parts. They probably just turned to you guys and said, yeah, we need some horns in here. And you guys,
Robert many times has ideas for horns, and then Jimmy will sit down and transcribe them.
Okay.
For the most part, yeah, Jimmy comes up with the brass lines that change the scope of the tune, you know, in some cases he probably should get writing credit, mm-hmm. but arrangers typically do not.
Okay. So that falls under the category of arranging.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to start a fight, but it kind of sounds like a ripoff.
Well, the fights have occurred already.
Okay. So. The fights are over and done.
We're over them.
The fights are over and done. Lee, let me talk about you as a singer, because let's go back to Chicago 7, Song of the Evergreens, written by Terry Kath, who's a great vocalist.
Right.
But he wants you to sing the song. He asks you to sing it.
He asked me to sing it.
Listen to the briskly whistling winter evergreens. Whispering through the frozen morning light, and tell me what's to come. Say my time is near.
And then, you know, once I got out there on the microphone, it was that's the true litmus test, right? Yeah. You know, if it doesn't work, you can tell in the first few bars. And it's, yank this guy out of the studio. Come on, get out of here. But it started working out. And then, you know, first you get the sound, and then you work on the technique and put a vocal together.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of vocalists in the band, so yeah, for you to step up and want to sing, and Terry want you to sing a song, that's pretty cool. And
it was great.
And then you're out of your element, so then, like you said, you really got to work hard to prove yourself.
Exactly.
And
because these guys have been pretty successful all the way. This is
they've had a little bit of success.
Yeah.
Then Chicago 10, Together Again, written and sung by you. Another great, another good song. Your voice is a higher register on these albums.
It is?
Yeah.
Than what I am now, you mean?
Well, all of our voices change, but I'm saying I was shocked when I checked the liner notes, and I was like, oh, that's Lee singing. I didn't, I didn't know it was you until I checked the liner notes. So,
right. Yeah. I have my, the tenor of my voice is more consistent with what Terry's was.
Yeah.
I sound more like Terry than anyone else in the band, I guess.
Speaking of Terry, how important was it to have Michelle at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame to accept on behalf of her dad?
It was great to see her again. And, I was surprised to see her come up on the stage, accepting for him, but you know, here we were, there she was. And, I think she did a good job.
Yeah. She's been on the show. She was on many, many years ago when her documentary came out about Terry, and she's,
right.
Yeah, she's great. She has a great energy.
You should have asked me. I already knew where the guitar was.
did you really know?
I did know. It was with her parents.
Yeah. They were like, it was like they were hiding them. They were
Terry's parents. Yeah.
Yeah. These things were hidden like in the closets. It's crazy. on the album Hot Streets, you co-write No Tell Lover, which was a hit of some note.
Every night in a different place, I'll meet you, tender lady. You're my no-tell lover. Ooh. Everyone keeps telling me that this affair's not meant to be, even though I need you now.
So that must have been fun when you get a writing credit on a song that people are singing.
Yes, I wrote the chords, mm-hmm. the changes. Danny wrote the lyric, and Peter wrote the melody.
How does it work when you guys are making an album back in the day, and everyone's bringing songs to the table? You really have to. You got to put your ego aside, right? Because eventually, someone's song isn't going to make it on the album.
Unfortunately, the ego does not get put aside because you're so close to the song. And, you know, so you would prefer that your song be on there. And when it is, you know, you move ahead and try to make it the best you can possibly make it.
Yeah.
And if it's not, you sort of grumble for a while and then move on, because that's life.
Are you were you able to listen to all the songs that were brought to the table and then say to yourself, yeah, my song might not be the best one?
No,
you were never able to say that. I like it. I like that. This is, look, that's why you're successful. I guess
you got to have a competition. Look at Lennon and McCartney, all the stories you're hearing about them now, right? I got a better one. I got Penny Lane was just down the street.
most recently it was, I can't even, this number is ridiculous to me. Chicago 36. colon now, you wrote a song America sung by Lou Pardini.
Right. Yeah.
And you also,
Congress hasn't changed much from that day.
No, nothing's changing. Lee, right. Nothing's changing.
That's the thing. Politically, you write a political song. It can be from 1862 and it's the same.
Yeah. I mean, Buffalo Springfield, for what it's worth. I mean, it's still relevant today.
Right.
Also, you do co-lead vocals on the Chicago 36 Now album with Robert Lamb on Something's Coming, I Know.
I think it's time for you to lose that cynical suit now. You want it out and man, it just don't fit you no more. Something coming, it shall.
So you're still getting your voice out there on the records, which is good.
Right. I get my voice out there on the records, and I sing Color My World during the show.
Yeah, no. That's right. That's yeah. right. Here's a rumor that I heard back at the time when Peter left and before you guys got Jason. Was Richard Page ever considered as a replacement for Peter? Richard Page from Mr. Mister?
He considered himself a candidate. Okay. And but it would have been great. But I think he used that that element to help him get a better deal with Starship.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
But, I don't know. Was that true, Richard?
You know? I don't know. That's just a rumor I'd always heard, and I've never been able to ask right. someone in the know.
But
so.
No, he wasn't a consideration at the time. Not seriously, because we knew he was with them.
When you guys are when you're not on the road, because you guys spend so much time together, you see each other every day when you're on the road. When you guys right. aren't on the road, do you still check in with each other?
Not that often. Mm-hmm. Once in a while, you know, because we have our families, we go back home and hang with the family. And, you know, I built a studio during the pandemic while I was doing the Carnegie Hall project.
All right.
So, you know, we all keep quite busy with whatever our lives are doing at the time.
Sure. When you are traveling on the road, who's your closest, companion? Can I say that, out of all the band members, new and past and present and new and everyone, who do you hang out with most on the road?
You know, it's amazing that we don't hang out a lot, even on the road. I mean, guys, during the day, that nobody wants to bother anybody's sleep patterns.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So you hesitate to call someone, and then you get up and you might see someone as you go out and take a walk around the city, which, you know, see, where am I? You know, and you go out and find out. And I don't even go out that much. I sit and watch Netflix and warm up my horn and, right. you know, get myself together. And on a day off, I like to rest.
Yeah,
I really do. Today, I'm invited out to one of the crew guys lives out in the country, only a couple hours away. So I think there's a get together going on. I'm going to go out there for a couple hours.
That's fun. That's cool.
Yeah, that'll be great.
Let me talk about Keith Howland. You guys had you guys went through many guitar players after Terry passed, and mm-hmm. finally you got Keith, and he's been with you guys for
eons, more than most bands are together.
when he's playing something, sometimes when you're on stage and he's playing and you don't see him but you just hear him, do you think of Terry?
Yes, because he emulates what Terry did, and he puts his own style in it. But right. he was very you could tell he listened to Terry over and over and over and over and over again, and it was apparent from the beginning, and he hasn't really changed from that. He really pulls it off every night.
Yeah, I really feel like the original Chicago band. No one is replaceable. But you have been able to get touring players that are doing justice to the music. Really,
they
really
are,
amazing.
And they went from fans to members.
Yes.
You know, themselves. And you know, we try not to tell them, you don't have to play this exactly like we did. The same song is going to happen. And these are the notes that you play in the process of completing that song. But put your own personality and try to encourage that.
And that's great, because you just don't want to be an imitator. You want to put your own, flourishes in there. And
exactly. Because you can tell the difference.
You can. Yeah.
Somebody's phoning it in.
Exactly. Exactly right.
Yeah.
Lee, I wish you guys great success, with the tour. You guys staying safe out there. You guys taking as many precautions as you can.
We are staying safe. And you know what? People at the show, I haven't heard one negative comment or anything about, oh my God, we got COVID from one show. We've done a lot of shows now. We started back in June. Was it June? Yeah, April, May, June. Yeah, June 23rd.
Yeah.
In Lincoln, Nebraska. And we've gone from one side of the country to the other, and people are excited and happy to be with each other, to be listening to music and, you know, good music, what they consider good music, and they're coming to see you.
Right.
Which amazes me that we're able to do this much time. And it's a testament, like you said, to these songs that just keep working through the years. It doesn't matter what year it is, the song still works. It's so much fun to do it. It's amazing.
And I would tell people, if you've never seen Chicago, first of all, what are you waiting for? And second of all, this band does not phone it in.
No.
And look, Robert, Jimmy, Lee, these guys are the veterans of the band, and they're not phoning it in. And if they're not, then no one else below them better. So you go to see this band, you're going to hear all the songs you love, and you're going to drive home feeling great. I mean, that's the kind of a show it is. That's the kind of music it is. And you can see it on your faces up there. Everyone's smiling and having a good time. I don't know what happened during the day, but when you're on the stage for that 2.5 hours, it's joyful.
Correct. Yep. It's a lot of fun. And I'm very proud and happy that I'm able to do it.
And we're happy that you guys are still doing it. So again, best of luck on the release of Chicago at Carnegie Hall Complete 50th Anniversary Collection, 16 CDs, comes out September 10th. You can pre-order it right now on the Reiner website. You can go to chicagotheband.com. You can go to Twitter at ChicagoTheBand and Instagram at ChicagoTheBand. And Lee, if you were to choose one song from your entire career that I can use as a playout song for this episode, what would you pick?
Let's do 25 or 6 to 4. We always end the show with that.
And should I do a live version from the new set?
Sure, why not?
Which night? Any night? Night one.
Night one.
All right, perfect. Lee, thank you so much. I really enjoyed talking with you, and I can't wait to see you guys when you come through California.
Can't wait to see you.
Take care, Lee. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, we're done recording, Lee, but thanks a lot. I really appreciated this.
All right, thank you very much. This was a pleasure.
Thank you. Jimmy Patco, trombone, and Lee Lockney, trumpet.
Thank you very much. Thank you.